those components we got yet, Loki. So one major issue that I'd like to address now, again, we've been trying to figure out what does it mean when we say Achloku? What does it mean always, or does it mean different things in different contexts? A very strong possibility, so it could be that all of the above are true, but is it some type of apshara, something that we do because we just don't have any more hope of getting a better answer, so let's split the difference, assuming the conditions are fair enough to allow that, whether it means there's enough basis to give half to each, or whether it means there isn't enough stopping us, like maybe a Ramai would stop us, for example, if somebody's lying, maybe we don't want to do it. So all of those issues affect the question of whether this is some type of a compromise, or is this some type of an actual din, that maybe there is justice here, that because each party is holding on to half, or is considered muhzak in some way, so therefore it's actual din to give 50% to each, or is it somewhere in between? And a lot of different questions are connected to this, and we'll try to fill in a little bit more about it today. So one of the major debates among the Rishonim, which I'm sure you've had a chance to see by now, is the Ani Aravtia debate. What does that revolve around? The Rishonim, sorry? So it seems to be a Ramai question, right? It seems to be, we've mentioned the whole time that we're trying to be sensitive to the role of Ramai and the role of Charuku Yechol Los Emes. Those terms sometimes used interchangeably, maybe they mean different things. So are we concerned that the division be potentially possible? Or are we afraid of a liar? Are those the same considerations or different considerations? So what about the following case? We know that if two people come holding on to a talus, and each one says, I own it. So the Mishnah says you split it. Because the presumption is that each one is claiming ownership because they found it. Each one is claiming to be the one who found an owner of those talus, and therefore has the rights to it. Okay, so then, apparently splitting it is an option. And we see that Rishonim consider this to be a case where Efshel Yochemes. It could be that this is really true. It could be that they both picked it up at once. But the Rishonim say, what happens if you have the essentially same scenario, two people fighting over a garment, but they're claiming something different? Each one is claiming not that I found it, but I made it. I'm the one who wove this talus. I own it because I am the creator of this item. So now you have a fundamentally contradictory claim. In the case of they both say they found it, it's possible they really found it at the same time. Is it likely? Maybe not, but at least it's conceivably possible. They both picked it up at the same moment, and they really do have actual equal history and equal rights here. But it's not too likely, it's not essentially possible, that each one created the whole garment. If they said they did it together, it's a chavrusa garment, that's what we talk about. But here each one is claiming they made this garment. Those are contradictory, mutually exclusive claims. So do we say achloku in such a case? What do you say? Machlokas, right? So what does Rashi say? No. Rashi says, no, you can't do that. Ramban says also, by the way, the Ramban we alluded to yesterday, we'll probably come back to him again today, but yesterday we talked about the Radbaz going through the six systems and what the rule is. Again, I would highly recommend, it's on the Mamar Tomos Seredi, but the Ramban in Baba Basra and Daf Lamadal are also a very thorough treatment where he goes through every system and why he thinks you pick one over the other. So in that context, also the Ramban says, like Rashi, that if you have the Achloku situation where their claims are fundamentally incompatible, can't be, they're both telling the truth, we can't say Achloku. However, some Rishonim disagree. Right? Who disagrees? Tosus, the Rush. Right? And they maintain that, look, Yachloku b'shvua, they're making a shvua anyway. The whole point of the Shavua is to scare people into being honest. So all the more so, if the situation inherently requires somebody to be lying, All the more so, it fits the model where Yahloku B'Shua is the appropriate idea. Let them make a Shua, and that will hopefully address the fact that somebody has to be lying in this scenario. So what are they arguing about? What is driving this debate between Rashi, let's say, and Tosfos? Anyone have any suggestions? Why is it that Tosfos can handle doing Yahloku in this case, and Rashi can't? So one suggestion you could make, and this is also in that essay we mentioned yesterday by Rav Nosson Gestetner in the Nosson period, where he suggests that maybe the issue here is, what's happening when you have a Yahloku? Is Yahloku an official action of Bezdin? Bezdin is coming, looking at his people and saying, okay, we declare Yahloku to be a good idea? Or should we say, the same piece that you were having to yesterday. So he suggests that this is a question here. Should we say that Bezdin is essentially formally dividing this item? Or maybe you could say you don't even need Bezdin in a sense. That there is an inherent claim each one has to half of the garment, and each one is currently holding half the garment. So Yahloku happens kind of automatically. We don't even need Bezdin to put their name on this. It happens by itself, it's self-evident. As we alluded to, we talked about our whole Pshara discussion in the opening Shiurim, right? We mentioned that Pshara often is a more involved kind of settlement. It's not just a 50-50 compromise, because to divide a number into two, you don't need a panel of Dayanim. You could do that on our own. So maybe Yahloku just happens here kind of automatically, and it's not really something that Bezdin even has to be associated with. And the suggestion is, right?
Even if it would happen automatically, they wouldn't become the base, but they're obviously...
Yeah, but Bezdin is essentially just carrying out what is obviously there. They're essentially here, these are the elements that are here. We don't even have to issue a ruling. We'll be the enforcement agency, perhaps we'll oversee it. But this is not even considered to be an action of Bezdin in the sense of a ruling. So maybe the issue is that if it was a more formal Bezdin type of verdict, so then we can't have them put their name on something, which is clearly not true. But if there's a lie here, the parties are saying something which are fundamentally contradictory, so then you can't have Bezdin sign off on it. If it's not 100% guaranteed that there's a liar, it's at least theoretically possible. They're both telling the truth. Okay, so then Bezdin can sign off on that, even if it's not actually the facts. But if it's impossible, you can't have Bezdin sign off on that. And therefore, those who would allow it, even in such a case, like Tosfos and the Rush, maybe they're saying that Bezdin's not really involved here. Bezdin maybe is going to oversee it. But this essentially is a self-evident type of division that doesn't even require Bezdin to pass judgment. He goes on to suggest that this might be the subtext in a few other issues, one of which especially is a very major source that's relevant to our sugya, and that's the Gemara on Daf Zayin. The Gemara on Daf Zayin, hopefully you had a chance to see a little bit. So there the Gemara has a case which, if you're not very careful with the language, you could have thought it was the exact same case as our Mishnah, because it seems like it's essentially synonymous, and the Gemara itself has to take us through the trip a little bit to clarify what the difference is. We have Shnayim Ochsim Betalas, and we have Shnayim Adukim Betalas, which you could translate in such a way that they sound like the exact same thing, but apparently there is a difference. What is Shnayim Adukim Betalas? You have two parties who are physically holding onto a talis, and there's enough under each one's hand that each one has a claim to a certain amount of material, physical material, under his hand. Which apparently is not the case in our Mishnah. Until now, you could have thought that was the case in our Mishnah. But the Gemara explains that our Mishnah, it's a much looser kind of holding, that each side is holding the edges, there isn't any physical material that is clearly in the territory of one party or the other. So if it's just you're holding the edges, each one has some type of technical connection to this talus, we'll split the whole thing 50-50. But if Shnayim Adukim, each one is holding on to some actual physical material under his fingers, so whatever material is actually being clutched by one party goes to that party. That's a chazaka. And then the rest that's not being held by either one, that will split. That yachlogu on the rest. So Shnayim Ochsin in our Mishnah, if they're each holding the edges, there's no significant material under your fingers, the whole thing goes 50-50. But if each one has a real hold on some material, they get the material they're holding, and the rest is 50-50. And that 50-50, the Gemara says, requires a shvuah. But there is an interesting machlokus as to what the shvuah is on. The language of the Gemara is that the shvuah is on the unclaimed material. The part in the middle, and that's split 50-50, so that's the achloku b'shvuah, hashar b'shvuah. However, Tosfos and a lot of Rishonim agree with them. Tosfos says that that word b'shar you should really erase. And that don't get the impression that the shvuah is only on the middle part. It's also on the part that is being held under hands. The entire garment, all of this division, is happening with the shvuah. Anybody who's going home with anything is taking it with a shvuah. So in other words, no subtle difference, but the Gemara seems to say that what you're actually holding, you get straight out, and the shvuah is on the rest. And Tosfos says, no, the shvuah is on the whole thing. This whole division happens through the utilization of a shvuah together with it. And the Rambam's a little different. What does the Rambam say? What term does he invoke?
What?
Sorry?
Gilgal?
Yes, right, the mystical term of the Gilgal. Right, no, it's a different usage. But Gilgal shvuah. So Gilgal shvuah means, that's also a big Bav Metzia topic, that sometimes you're chayiv in a shvuah for actual fundamental reasons. And sometimes you have what's called a Gilgal Shvuah, which essentially means that you're already on the tables for a Shvuah. You already got your Sefer Torah out to take a Shvuah. So once Bezdin already has you with the Shvuah, so then they'll say matter number two, which normally would not impose a Shvuah on you, but once you're already taking a Shvuah, you take a Shvuah about this also. It's like a secondary offense. It's like getting pulled over for not having a seat buckle. I think it's still considered to be a secondary offense. And if the police see you without driving without a seatbelt, I think the law still is they can't pull you over for that. But if you're doing something else, once they pulled you over, they can give you a ticket for the seatbelt too. Sorry?
Reckless driving.
So they pull you over, assuming you don't have too much experience, but they pull you over for some other reckless driving kind of issue. So then once they have you pulled over, they can say, and you have no seatbelt, and you have a cell phone, you have whatever. That's all Gilgal stuff. The Megal go on to it, all the other charges. So too, sometimes there are issues which we can't force you to take a shvuah on. But once we already have you taking a shvuah, you've already been pulled over by the cops, they can say, take a shvuah on this also. So the Rambam, I'll take a question in a second, the Rambam uses that language to say here that Megalgul and Ahashar, that maybe you don't really need to take a shvuah on the stuff that is claimed with the fingers, but once we have a shvuah, so we'll take a shvuah here too. I think Roni was up first.
What kind of shvuah is it? Can you take like your
right? So it sounds like the shvuahs that we're talking about here are all shvuahs to Rabbanan. But again, the shvuahs topic as a whole, we'll have to get into a little bit more head on, but it sounds like the Gemara seems to take the view that these are all Rabbanan shvuahs. Well, the extra shua may not be, but that's also a sugi we want to give its own full attention to. But it seems like the main shua itself is shua drabban. I think Jonathan was up next, and Michael is that.
The Rambam says, I don't know if this makes a difference, but the Rambam uses the lashon that they're like says explicitly that they're each claiming the entire thing is theirs. So Could that be any different? Like, is that like 100% clear in the Gemara that they're each claiming that, or when the Gemara's case is talking, that it could be that you know they each are holding on to a certain portion of the phallus, and then the question is, what do you do with the part in the middle, whereas Rambam is taking it for granted that, no, it's not what you do with the part in the middle, only each one of them is saying, even the part that the other guy's holding on to also belongs to you as well.
I think that is the open assumption, unless anybody contradicts that assumption. I think it's basically the only difference between that case and our Mishnah is just that there's more physical territory already.
No, but I'm saying even Tosfos would agree with that the Rambam is saying?
I believe so. I think everyone's assuming they both claim the whole thing. And just in our Mishnah, nobody has any physical claim to anything more than the other, so it's just 50-50. And in this case, there is actual material that has physical holding that gets factored in differently. So it may not come out to 50-50. One guy has bigger fingers, and one guy managed to grab more, so he'll end up with that plus 50 of what's left. Michael?
Just to clarify, The original Shavua is a Takana Rabbanan, and after that is the Gilgal Shavua on what's under his fingers?
Right. That the Shavua is on the generally Yachloku 50-50, and then so the Rambam seems to be saying that the finger Shavua really you wouldn't need to have. And that's not really a part of the thing. But since we have them on the table, we put that on too. So you basically have three ways to read it. That the Gemara sounds like the Shavua is only on the middle stuff. Most Rishonim are saying it's actually on everything. And the Rambam is saying that really the Ikar is on the middle stuff, and Gilgul Shavua will put it onto the everything package. Your hand up? So it's been suggested, and this is something that's in that essay as well, that maybe that's the question here. That if you have a Yachloku, Midin Chazaka, you have two people, each one holding on to some material and they're splitting. So maybe we should say that even once we have a concept of a shvur, that shvur doesn't apply to that part. That happens automatically. The division of property, the part that's actually being held, happens on its own, even if Bezdin is overseeing it. That's kind of happening on autopilot. And that maybe the only need for their shvur is on the stuff that's not so clearly indicated. Okay, so in the middle, we'll divide that 50-50, so that maybe Bezdin needs to oversee and to actually impose a rule. But the part that's being divided through physical achiza, so that doesn't even need Bezdin to have any role. So we don't need a shvur for that part. While the Rishonim, who are saying the shvur is on the whole thing, are perhaps saying that once Bezdin is addressing the whole situation, so now it's all under their authority, and even that which is self-evident, they're going to impose a shvur on the entire experience. This question of what exactly does Yachloku represent? Does it represent something kind of automatic on its own? Or a formal ruling of Bezdin? So he suggests there that it's also relevant to a somewhat complex Gemara in Yevamos, just a real little synergy from last year's Masechta and this year's Masechta. So the Gemara and Yevamos and Daf Lamed Zayin in the days, you get a chance to see that Gemara?
Yeah.
So the Gemara has a complicated situation. Let's say you have somebody who is of indeterminate status. So you have a man, before this guy comes along, you have a man who dies apparently without children. And then his wife marries the brother, Yibum, and she has a son. And really she's supposed to wait, but she does it too quickly. So now this son, we're not sure what his identity is. Maybe he's a son of the dead father, the first one. Or maybe he's a son of the Yavam, of the new husband. So that's going to affect his inheritance rights. Because this man who died, so who does his property go to? If he has a son, his property shall go to the son. If he doesn't have a son, his property should go to his brother. So the brother, the Yavam, and the son, they duked it out as to who gets his property. So that seemed to be a Yachloku situation. That was the first scenario in the Gemara. So let's say that happened. They had this whole conflict. And they divided the property. Then the Gemara talks about a case, let's say it happens years later, that the Yavam's children are the players now. And they're inheriting their father. So now, this original Suffolk guy, we don't know who his father was, let's call Reuven the dead original husband and Shimon the Yavam. So now, this boy,
call him Menashe. So Menashe says, hey, brothers, I'm Shimon's son. So when you're dividing up all the property, share with me. So the brothers are like, oh, that's very clever. You already split the property, claiming that you were Reuven's son. Half of all of our assets went to you because they went to you as you're claiming that you were Reuven's son. So if you want to split with us, you want to claim to be our brother instead of our cousin, so then give back the half that you took originally. So he says, well, either way, right? Either way, it's going to work out that I should get something from you. Because either property, I'm Reuven's son, or I'm Shimon's son and I'm your brother. So the question basically comes up, it's a machlokus in the Gemara, do we say Kam Dina or Hadar Dina? Do we say that's originally achloku, so that exists as a reality and you have to work off of that system now? Or do we say, no, Hadar Dina, and this idea of him giving back the half that he originally got from the achloku is a viable option? So the Gemara has one way of addressing what that machlokus is about, but as the Nas Imperio observes, it could be the same question. Essentially, was that originally Yachloku? Was that an actual Psak of Bezdin, which has Kiyum, that's already a part of reality now? Or do we say, no, that Bezdin didn't really do anything. It was split because 50-50, that was the way things automatically fall out. But it doesn't have the status of an actual Bezdin ruling. And therefore, if there's a new claim being made now with different elements, we can reverse the whole thing. So maybe that all goes back to this original question, what exactly is Yachloku require? Is Yachloku an actual Psak of Bezdin? Or is it something just happening on its own, that we have two people with equal claims, okay, it makes sense to let them each walk away with half of it, and Bezdin is not even the deciding party. Right?
That makes it sound like the inheritor can decide which family to become part of.
Well, that's the option that he gave. You know, he gave his brothers the option. He said, like, look at it either way, decide how you want to treat me, but either way I get a cut. And then as the Rishonim explained, the cut could differ because if Shimon had a larger estate and he's one of their kids, he'll be mixed in with a larger estate. If it's not a larger estate, he'd rather have half based on...
Exactly, but there's other applications besides just inheritance.
Correct. So with all of that consequence, do we see that fresh or do we see the Afloku as having its inherent significance?
That would determine it?
Well, so the other ramifications you have to figure out. It would probably be subject to other rules. Every mumminus has its own lens. But at least in terms of a mumminus, it seems like that's the option. Hi.
Just going back on what we said before, is it possible, we said according to Tosfos that we would say possibly Yachloku is like a natural conclusion?
Right. And therefore, even if they're lying, it could still...
That seems to contradict a little bit with what we said, what Chelsea said by Bishar.
Okay.
So would it be possible...
Because in comparing... Which Chelsea are you talking about? Are you talking about the Tosfos of Basra?
Yeah.
Right, so that could be... Because that Tosfos itself has already two opinions. So you have to figure out which opinion... It's arguing with itself, so before it...
Would we be able to say that the Shema kind of absolves based on all of it?
I mean, the Shua is them passing off their responsibility. Once they impose the Shua, that is possible, right? That is possible, that's what the Shua accomplishes, and that's something we'll get to when we talk about the Shua in more detail. But yeah, that definitely is a possibility. Once they impose the Shua, so therefore they accomplish their responsibility.
So it's not necessarily like a natural conclusion.
Right. Like, if they impose the Shua, that may change things, perhaps. Maybe we'll see when we get into the Shua, if that makes sense. So that's one way of looking at this whole Rashi Tosfos consideration. The question of whether Anir Artia is a workable issue. And again, Rashi's saying it's not. Maybe that's because Bezdin can't sign his name on such a thing. And Tosfos saying it is, maybe because it happens automatically, we don't need Bezdin to sign off on it. Is there any other way to look at it? Any other way we could consider that question? One issue to pay attention to, and this is a major issue that Svarim talk about, is if you think about the case of Ani Eretia, the fact that each one claims that they're the ones that made this garment. So yes, there's a definite Ramai, But the chalukah still could be emes. It still might be that it's 50-50. It just can't be that they're telling the truth. And that we talk about two people claim to find it at the same time. So then maybe there, maybe the chalukah is emes, it's 50-50. And they're even both telling the truth. They maybe both picked it up at the same time. So what have we changed when we said each one claims to have made the garment? They can't both be telling the truth. But is it impossible that the garment is half one and half the other? It's 50-50? It's possible. Right? It still could be they both found it. They're still lying about how they got it. Maybe they both picked it up. And they therefore had half a claim. And each one decided that I'm not going to get too far with my claim that we picked it up at the same time, so I'm going to go for the gold, I claim to have made it. In that case, it's not that one's a liar, they're both liars. But it's possible they're both liars, but the chalukah is still true. So when we say chalukah yecholios emes, it's an important question to ask. What do we mean by that? We mean that it has to be that the 50-50 ruling is fair, is accurate on some historical level, maybe? Or do we mean no, that their claims have to at least conceivably be true? Because this is essentially what this case helps us to test. Here, it could be that they really do own this garment 50-50. But their claims are definitely false. So when we say it has to be possibly true, do we mean that it has to be possibly the case that this ruling is accurate? Or does it mean that it has to be true through their claims? It's an interesting question. I think some of the Beis Halevi talks about. We'll talk about it a little bit more next week. What is our concern for truth? That they're telling the truth, or that the psak is true? Aaron, you had a question?
Yeah, couldn't you always make the argument that they're lying about how... Couldn't you always make this argument in every case and therefore you'd never have a case of that the chalukah wouldn't be emes?
I mean, because it's always possible that it's true.
Right, it's always right. Possible that they're lying about
yes, so it's a little bit a question of how remote do we want to get. So, for example, the Tosfos on Daf Beis and Aleph said that even a Mana Shlishi, theoretically, could be 50-50 because maybe some property was transferred while it was in the hands of a third party. It's just it's so not the way things are done that it's off the charts. Or the Arba, you know, the boat, theoretically, could they have bought it together? Maybe, but it's just not within our radar screen of what's happening. We have two people claiming to own a boat, not that they found it, but that they own it historically. So there's just no basis to see here any kind of a likely split. So to a certain extent, we say Yecholios Emes, we are talking about possibilities that are within our radar screen that have some level of viability and not things that you have to completely make up a story that's off screen.
Is there some yardstick for that?
It's a good question, right? How you divide the yardstick. So it's a fair question, but we just work with what Tosa said, that it's not the derech to do things that way, so it's just not it's not something that's done. While things happen and being picked up at the same time, could happen. It's just statistically unlikely. So essentially, maybe that's the issue here. So what is our concern for MS? That the ruling has to be MS, or has to at least be possibly MS, or that their claims have to be at least theoretically true? So that's something that's worth discussion as well. One place to see an interesting discussion about this, you could argue on it, there's a sefer called, it's a contemporary sefer called Moreshet Moshe, just as a Mar Mokum, you can download it for free on HebrewBooks.org. So he has a discussion about this, about that question. And presumably, as he says, along a little bit different lines, if Yachloku was a Pshara, so then it could be we have a looser consideration. That we want the Pshara to theoretically be true. Maybe we don't care about whether their claims could be true. But if the Pshara theoretically comports with something that might be the case, all right, then we're willing to make such a Pshara.
Maybe MS means that, let's say we are assuming Besdin is involved to some extent, but Besdin is not going to be involved in signing their name on something which is completely impossible. And having at least one scenario where it could be, you know, that's called a tliya. We have such a concept in other areas of halacha that you can hang your hat on something. There's a certain possibility where, even if it's not the most likely possibility, but sometimes, let's say you have a suffix, the rabbanan, you have kind of a low-level suffix, and there's a scenario where something was okay, so sometimes the halacha allows you to say, okay, since a scenario exists, we can invoke that scenario and assume it was such a scenario. So maybe that's all, if, let's say if it's a pshara, so maybe that's all we need. We need that it just should not be completely contrafactual in an absolute sense. But if it's more of a psak kind of idea, then maybe we need even more that not only should it be a viable possibility, but it should be a viable possibility through their claims. And if their claims make it impossible for this split to be true, then maybe we have a harder time. Maybe that's what Rashi is saying, that we can't impose the achloku if it's essentially an inconceivable possibility specifically through the way they are claiming. So a suggestion. It could be. Hi.
So even in that case, according to that opinion, if they would keep their mouth shut about Aniya Rokte, then
they would have been better off. Right, which is essentially our mission. Right, so while Mishnah may be the whole Gemara's discussion about Anim and Sasiya, the Kula Shali, so the question is, are they better off saying nothing than saying something completely false? Presumably, yes. We don't necessarily have a scenario where they're saying nothing.
Right.
I have to figure out what exactly the rule would be, but it does make sense to say that it's better for them to say nothing than to say something which makes them established as somebody's lying. Okay, so part of our question here, again, is if we say Yachloku, even if we say that it is some type of Besdin ruling, so is it a ruling through some type of Vadai system? They're going to say that this is the fact that you're both holding it. That's enough to make us say a real psak, you each get 50-50, official ruling of Besdin. Or even once Besdin does it, it's still kind of wishy-washy. We have no better approach. So it's a suffix, everything's equal, there's no information. So let's split it up. What difference would it make whether we call it a vadai or a suffix?
Where I come.
So that's one possible difference, right? So let's say that there's something else to throw into the mix. Let's say it's not something that would be accepted otherwise. It doesn't necessarily make the threshold for real evidence. But there's something to tilt the equation. So some Achronim raised this question. Let's say, like Aaron just said, let's say there's a Marakama. Let's say you have a situation that would be Achloku. You'd have to change it from the Messiah situation. But it's a situation where we could have said 50-50 split. But in addition to what we have in front of us, we know that one of the parties had owned it at some point in history. That makes him a marakama, makes him the initial owner. So marakama is not enough to outweigh, let's say, a mukhzar. You have somebody who really has a chazaka on something, and somebody else comes and says, well, I owned it last year, I'm marakama. So that's very nice, but for all we know, you sold it, and the fact is this guy has it now, and so his current chazaka blows away the chazkas marakama. So here, if we call it an actual chazakah, the two parties who each have half of the talis, so chazakah beats out marakama. So even if one guy says, listen, I can also invoke the fact that I historically owned it, well, that's great. That doesn't help for you to get the other guy's chazakah away. But if this whole split is kind of wishy-washy, kind of based on a suffix, so then marakama is going to maybe tilt the equation. We don't have evidence to know that it does, but maybe it makes sense to say that it could tilt the equation. Question about that? Everyone follow that? The question is, if you have some type of wishy-washy information, and let's say you have some, if the whole situation is basically a suffix policy, so maybe even evidence that we would not consider to be acceptable, evidence that wouldn't make the threshold, maybe that'll count as well. So Marikama should also count. Or, to give you another example, both of these, by the way, were suggested by Rav Aaron Yaffe, the Navardika Rosh Yeshiva. I should just emphasize, in general, happen to invoke a lot of names of contemporary Svarim, older Svarim, so don't get bogged down as if that's so hard to keep track of. It's not a major priority. I try to say things b'shem omrim, to give proper credit to where things come from, but it's not something that you should let it weigh you down too much.
So the previous thing, a piece on Marikama was from him.
So he mentioned that point, as do others. And he also mentions a second point, that let's say you have the two parties are Bari v'Shemel. One person is sure about his claim, and the other party is not so sure. And one guy says, I'm pretty sure I picked this up before you. And the other guy says, I'm not sure, I may have picked it up before you. And now we're both holding on to it. So do we give any weight to confidence, Bari v'Shemel? So it's a machlokas, and we probably paskin that we don't. But if you're dealing with a mukhzar, so the fact that the other guy is sure doesn't outweigh mukhzakus. It's in general an interesting question psychologically, how much credit to give somebody's confidence. There's a lot of literature about this today, that just because somebody is sure about something doesn't make him right, and it's not necessarily relevant. So it's an interesting question, how much weight should you give to Bari-ness. So here, in general, if I have a guy who's a mukhzak, and somebody comes with a claim against him, and he says he's sure, it's Bari, and the mukhzak's not so sure he's wrong, still, we're not going to give credit to the Bari over the Shema. But what about this case? Should we say that each half is mukhzak, and therefore, even if the other guy says Bari, it's not going to make a difference? Or we say, this isn't a real chazaka that we're recognizing here. It's just a reason to say achloku, in a wishy-washy kind of way. And if one side says bari, that'll give us a basis to tilt things. And then we will credit the bari. You hear the question? Right, very similar to the previous question, that bari v'shama and cheskes marakama, they're both things which don't normally outweigh an actual mukhzak. So what's the story here? Do we have an actual mukhzak? Each one has a chazaka on half? Or do we say that, no, it's not a real mukhzak, it's just a reason to split things. It's enough to give us a reason to split things. And anything else that's worth taking into account may tilt things. So this, the Ramban discusses. If you saw the Ramban in Bava Basra, the one we mentioned at the beginning, where he gives his whole survey of why we do different policies. So the Ramban there says that if you have a bari in the equation, if you have a yachloku situation, but one side is bari, so then we will acknowledge the bari. Because, in other words, it's not a real mutzah. It's kind of a wishy-washy chazaki here, just a reason to split between the two. And bari can outweigh it. If you had a chance to see this Ramban, and it's easy to miss the key points because it's long and it goes through a lot of things, it's worth looking at the Ramban again. Maybe you have some time tomorrow again. It was on the Marmakomos, the first sheet, the second sheet, I don't remember, but it's the Ramban in Bava Basra Lamedalim and Beis really goes through a lot. So at the end of the Sugi, it's kedai to see it again because he just really goes through everything from beginning to end. So this Ramban, he says that a bari would outweigh this Yafoku policy, because we don't really have a chazaka. This is not something that we can significantly say there's a real mukhzak here on each side.
In a case of Vanerama, aren't we worried about enabling one of them to swear falsely?
So it's an interesting question in general. And you know, we can get up to it in Bava Metzia from a couple of different angles, so we'll discuss it later maybe. But the Svarim discussed the question that we have an Isser with Me'ivar L'Sitei Michshol. and that we are not allowed to give someone a stumbling block, to hand somebody a situation where they will do an avera. So based on that, the Sfarim discuss, how do we ever have a concept of Shuas Bezdin? That very often the Shua will involve two parties with incompatible claims. So if we're going to have a mechanism of Shua that we're advocating, so we're essentially telling someone to lie. So we hope that that won't be the case. We hope they'll be scared and they'll decide not to lie again. They'll back off because of the Shua. But we recognize the possibility that there are people who are a significant percentage of the population that's going to lie anyway. So how do we facilitate such a situation? It is a question that's discussed. We won't focus on it today because we're in a lot of things, but it's a question we can get to from a couple of angles. We talk about Shuas. Also, Lufnei Iver has a significant presence in the first paragraph of Bava Metzia also, in at least two places. So God willing, sometime this semester we'll talk about Lufnei Iver, we'll have an opportunity to address that question specifically. So it is a fair question to ask in terms of how does Shuas exist because of that potential of causing somebody to lie under oath, but we won't address it so much today because it'll take us a little bit far afield. So this issue that whether this is a real muchzikos or not could affect these questions. Should we say that a marakama could tilt things? Or should we say that a bari could tilt things? All these things we wouldn't count against the real chazaka. Do they count for yachloku purposes? Do they count to upset the chazaka, so to speak, the lowercase ches chazaka that each party has on the talis? Jonathan?
We should understand from Rabbi Yochanan's point on Bari B'Shema, so he didn't add anything onto the Ramban?
Well, he invokes the Ramban to make this point that this seems to be the question, right? The question, right? The Ramban almost says it straight
explicitly.
Out. Right, the Ramban pretty much says it straight out. But basically, that's a part of this discussion, that how do we view this chazaka, how do we view the psak right. That comes from the chazaka? Right, we have a lot of different questions that we're trying to weave together here. And essentially, how do you view the chazaka of each party on what they're holding? And how do we view the psak that emanates from that chazaka? And is it emanating from the chazaka, or is it emanating from something less than that? So all of that affects these questions of how much weight would we give to something else. Now, there is a Tosfos later on in the Sefer, we also put on the Marakomos and Daf Kufta Zayin, where Tosfos talks about if you have two people who own a building together, so one person owns the lower floor and one person owns the higher floor, and the building collapses. Hopefully nobody's inside of it, so it's just a question of the property of the materials. But it's all mixed in together, because it was two floors of a building. So you have two owners, so really they should split everything. But the Mishnah talks about what happens if one says, oh, I recognize that rock, it's my rock, I recognize that brick, it's my brick from downstairs. So as Tosfos notes, it seems that in that case, it's a complicated discussion in the Gemara, so I'm kind of oversimplifying it, but it seems like Bari is not going to play a role so much, and that each one is considered to be muchzak in their half. So is that a proof that in the yachloku situation, each one is genuinely muchzak? So Rav Vosner, the author of the Tshuva Shevet Alevi, has a tshuva about this, and he says it's a whole different situation. Because there, we know from day one that the two own this house together. So we know that really all of the materials are b'chezke shnehem, and we know for sure that they're really entitled to half. So there's really a pre-existing chazaka, the awareness that these two people are the actual owners of this house together, and it's a question how to divide it up. That's stronger than the talis chazaka. The talis chazaka, where just each one is claiming ownership only based on their current holding on to the talis, there, maybe the Ramban is right, that maybe Bari B'Shema will be taken into account. And not every situation is equal. Again, that the yachloku of that situation with the bricks, there we have the pre-existing knowledge that the two of them own the house together. That makes it a much more solid chazaka than our Mishnah of Shnei Mochus and Batalis. Hi.
Sorry, it's a bit tangential, but what if, if there is a, in this case with the building, if let's say I'm responsible for all the money stuff and he's responsible for the upkeep and the maintenance and, you know, making sure the building is, you know, safe, even though we're both, I guess, you know, we both have a chazaka in owning the building, it's his responsibility to make sure it doesn't collapse. So that put more of the obligation on him to pay.
Yeah, that is hugely tangential. That really is a second half of the septic question, the question of how you assign all those other issues. We're not even considering the fact that there's any type of liability here with either party in terms of all kinds of other variables you could get into. I will defer that to
real estate.
That's definitely an important question, but it involves so many other elements that it will take us a little bit far afield.
Doesn't the government say there that the party, let's say, Alamari, that's my brother, or Shema, that is my brother?
Yeah, I'm oversimplifying because...
It says there that I get.
Right, then it gets to the whole question of how does this get into Rav Nachman. I'm oversimplifying because the Gemara then says that it depends on a couple of different tliyas. So the maskana of the Gemara is that probably is separate from that issue. So without, in the interest of time, I'm not going to go back and forth with the Gemara, but the way it comes out is that presumably Bar Hashem is not the defining element and that they're both considered to be Mukzak. So this question, where we just saw the past few examples of Bar Hashem and Marikama, of are we going to factor in lesser considerations? And is this a real, honest-to-goodness chazaka each one is entitled to have, or is it more of a wishy-washy suffix? The truth is, this was dealt with pretty explicitly by one of our most lamdish rishonim, the Ran. We got a chance to see the Chidush HaRan on Davav in Bav Metzia. So the Ran discusses a case there, hopefully I got a chance to see as well. Pretty sure this was on the Marmar Kumas, one of the lists. The Gemara has a suffix on Davav about the following case. So normally we say two people with a talis, they split it. But the Gemara asks, what happens if one guy grabs it from the other? Now one guy is toe-facing from the other. So now one guy is holding the whole thing. So the Gemara asks, all right, this is Sos Gemara above Mid Aleph, the middle boy Ruzera, talk to Echa Bifneinu, Mahu. What if in front of Bezdin one guy grabs it from the other? So the Gemara says, well, what kind of situation is that? So hechi dami, e deshasik odia dile. If the guy, the grabbee, lets the grabber keep it without objection, so it sounds like he's acknowledging that that's legitimate. V'i dekatzavach, and if he's screaming, what are you doing? This is a 50-50 case. Why are you grabbing this from me? So then ma'ameh havo l'mebet. So he did everything he could to keep his claim asserted. So then what do you want from him? The other guy was stronger, but it's still the same yachloka rules. So what's the scenario here? So says the Gemara, well, lo tzricha deshasik meikara v'hadar tzavach. At first he was quiet. And then afterwards he complained. And he explained that he complained, you could see it either way, that either he was quiet at first because he thought it was legitimate, or he thought, look, Bezdin's watching, aren't they going to stop? So it's not my job to stop the other guy from grabbing it. Once Bezdin's involved, so they'll enforce things. So the Gemara says, we're not sure how to read this, that's the Rizayu's question. So says the Ran. And the Ran really fits right into this discussion, says it pretty much explicitly, that we're clearly talking about some kind of strange shtika here. And that Rav Zeira's question, what's his question? He says, this is some type of low-level evidence. That he's shosek, but he's not shosek, he's quiet now, he's talking later. So clearly this doesn't meet the threshold of anything that we would usually really use to be motzi min ha-muchzak. This is not the hodas baldin. This is not some type of actual evidence. So Rav Zeira's question is essentially the question we've been talking about the past few minutes. What's the nature of our Yachloku division? Is it a real, legitimate division based on Muchzak? In which case, this type of very minor evidence is not going to count for anything. Or should we say that it's really just a big suffix, and we're dividing it misuffix? And therefore, maybe every little indication is something to factor in. And the fact that this guy let somebody else grab it from him, that's something we'll take into consideration as well. So it's really the same question about the Marakama and the Bari. It's all, how are we viewing this Yachloku? Is it a Yachloku that has real significance? Or is it a Yachloku that is
very wishy-washy, is based on Safek, and will invite into the discussion even other indications that are not necessarily so significant. All right, so far everybody holding? Everybody still alive? Okay, so this touches upon a couple of other questions as well, just to clarify. So first of all, we're trying to figure out, when we call the two parties here Mufzak, is it a Mufzak with a capital Mem or with a lowercase Mem? Is it a real Chazaka? But part of the question is also, what are we referring to? Right, do we say that, and this is a question we alluded to in the past few days, but it's just important to point out, it's really a Machlokus in the Rishonim. Right, is this that the Chazaka, whether it's a real Chazaka, fake Chazaka, whatever it is, does it apply to the whole garment? Essentially, each one has a contradictory chazaka to the other. Each one is holding on to the garment and has some type of chazaka on the whole thing. So you have to figure out how to reconcile that. Or should you say that, no, you can't have such a chazaka. Each one, therefore, has a 50% chazaka. So each one has a chazaka on half. So he's getting that which he has a chazaka on. You follow the question? Do we grant some type of whatever status, whatever our chazaka means, are we granting that status, each one has the status in the whole garment? So it's mutually contradictory, so we have to split it, but each one has the full chazaka. Or are we giving 50% chazaka to each one, so each one is just walking away with his chazaka? So that was an issue of Bachanan talks about. It's an essay in the Kovet Shiurim, if you want to read it. And Chelik Beis and Simon Tess. But just to be aware, the Rishonim pretty much explicitly do address it. It's a Rashi on Daf Beis and the Beis. It's Dibra Maskel Shvua. Rashi in the bottom of Beis and the Beis seems to say that each one is considered to be connected to the entire garment. Right, if you see Rashi on the bottom of Beis and the Beis, B'Shvua Palgila, Rakeva and the Mechaser Govayna, B'Masha Chaveru Tofes, the high tofis bekula, the high tofis bekula. It's essentially as if each one is holding the whole thing. And there's a chidush aran and daf beis amud aleph. It says like that as well. While the Tosfos Harash, also available for free on HebrewBooks.org, if you want to download one, Tosfos Harash says explicitly that each one is considered to be muchzak on half the garment. So that's just, again, a technical question. Once we figure out what the chazaka is, what does it apply to? Does it apply to the whole thing, and we're just giving you what you have your chazaka to? Or does it apply to the whole thing, and therefore we have to duke it out and figure out how to assign that? This is also relevant to the Migo question. Now, the Migo question, as we mentioned, we're going to discuss more fully after Sukkos, the whole question of Migo. Sorry? But I will get into all the Migo details, but just the point that's relevant for our discussion is a little bit of tangency, so let's just to bring it in. If you look for a second at a few select lines of Tosfos and Daf Beis and Aleph, let's look at it together. All right, the Mishnah talks about our case. First of all, each one claims the whole palace. So the rule is we split it 50-50. What happens if Zelmer Kula Shali Vizelmer Chetzia Shali? One guy says I own the whole talis, the other guy says I own half of it. So Haomer Kula Shali Yeshava Shein Lopachas Mishlo Shechalakim. The guy who says he gets the whole thing gets three quarters with a Shvua. Haomer Chetzia Shali Yeshava Shein Lopachas Mirivia. The guy who claims half gets a quarter with a Shvua, and they each get that division. So Tosfos asks about this guy with more modest claim. The guy who only claims half of it and then walks away with a quarter, half of what he's claiming. So Tosfos asked the question which all the Rishonim talk about. Sivim Tomar Yehei Neman Dechetziv Shalo. Why don't we believe this guy? When this guy claims he owns half of it, he should be credited with that whole claim. Why? Migo Dibay Amar Kula Shali. Because he could have said that he owns the whole thing. And we just saw that a guy who claims to own the whole thing ends up walking away with half. So if this guy wanted half, he could have claimed the whole thing and walked away with half. So since he had a better taina that would have given him the half, so let's
credit his actual claim as true. In other words, he's only claiming a half. So let's say that claim is true, because if he just was trying to get, if he was trying to steal a half, so to speak, he could have done so by claiming the whole thing. So since that would have worked, let's credit his claim now as being true and give him the half, straight out. So there's a big issue in the Rishonim, and there are many different answers to it, which we'll talk about again at a later date. But part of the question is, you see, Tosfos raises the issue, one of the answers Tosfos gives, to skip a little bit. So Mefarish Rivam, skip a few lines. Demigo lahotzi lo amrina. Debechatziv hasheni muchzok zek moze. But in other words, each half has a chazaka, and therefore, if I'm going to try to take away from what you're holding, my migo needs to have a lot of power. My migo has to be strong enough to be motzi mina moze. And this answer in Tosfos is saying, we're not going to use a migo to let you take away somebody else's stuff. So apparently you're going to have to say that each party has a chazaka on this whole palace, so to speak. And the power of Migo is not enough to undermine that. Migo lahotzi lo amrina. Now it's interesting, besides the fact that Tosfos has a lot of other answers, and the Rishonim have a lot of other answers, and this is a major discussion, which again we'll have to come back to looking at Migo directly. The Tosfos Rid over here says that no, this is not Migo Lahotzi. This is Migo Lahachzik. That all we want to do is give this person what he already had. And we want to credit him with a chazaka based on his Migo. And maybe that does work. Maybe it also doesn't work. You have to figure out what the rules of Migo are. Does Migo work? Some Rishonim might say that Migo does work to be Motzi. Have to figure out what Migo works for and what it doesn't work. But before we can answer that question, we have to know, what are we trying to do? Are we trying to use this Migo to be Motzi Min HaMotza? Or are we trying to use this Migo to establish what it is that each one has? And therefore, maybe it could do that. Maybe there is no existing real Chazaka. And maybe the Migo should give this person an actual Chazaka. In other words, Tosfos here might say there already is a chazaka and you're trying to use the migo to undermine it. While the Tosfos Rid says we don't really have a chazaka, you're trying to use the migo to create a chazaka. So again, it all goes to this question of what actually is going on, what exactly is the status of each one vis-a-vis what they're holding, vis-a-vis the whole garment, and how are we addressing them when we paskin yachlokum. All the questions really tie into each other. What is the status each person has in what they're holding and the whole garment? And what does Yachloku mean as far as those various statuses indicate? That is a genuine psak, it's a psak of safek, it's a pshara. All of this is going to impact each other. So we're all almost out of time soon. I'd like to review a little bit to make sure that we're all on the same page. But I'll just throw out one other issue, which we'll then pick up on with next week. But many people asked the first day, or among the first days, when they saw Tosfos and Baba Basra. That Tosfos and Baba Basra, we saw the Rabbeinu Tam and the Riva, and we haven't really acknowledged the fact, we've been in denial about the fact, that the Riva really says two things. We only addressed half of what he said. What did the Riva say? According to Rabbeinu Tam, when do you say Yachloku? Oksin. Right? When you have each one holding something. And the Riva disagreed. Right? The Riva said it wasn't about Oksin. And we saw yesterday the Rambam might be in his camp as well. It's not about Oksin. But as long as there's no Ramai, then we can divide things up. We can do Yachloku even if there's no Oksin. We're just worried about Ramai. But we haven't really addressed the fact that the Riva then goes on to say something else. What does the Riva go on to say? even if there is Oxen, or you say even if there is Oxen, the Riva says he's willing to do Yachloku without Oxen, as long as there's no Rabbah. But if there is Oxen, then he says you can do Yachloku even if there is a Rami. So essentially you could do Yachloku as long as you have one or the other. If you have no Rami, you don't need Oxen. If you have Oxen, you could do it even with a Rami. So what the Riva seems to be telling us is something that we've suspected all along, but the Riva pretty much makes it undeniable, at least according to him, that there could be more than one type of Yachloku. Not every time that we say Yachloku is it necessarily the same thing. And this is something, again, I'm not expecting anybody to remember all these names, but it's discussed at length by... Sorry? Yes, right. It's discussed at length by Rav Gosman in the Kuntres Yeshur. Very recommended reading, but again, this is just hopefully an enhancement. But it's discussed there, it's discussed by others as well, that it seems pretty clear that the Riva is telling us two different types of Yachloku. That apparently, if you have Yachloku that involves Oxen, each party is holding on to it, then we have the right to divide their property even if there's a Rami involved. We have the right to split it. That's the Riva's position. And if there's no Rami, then we can do Yachloku even if there's no Oxen. So you pretty much have to say that he's addressing two different systems, two different Yachlokus. Anyone want to try to characterize either of these? There's probably a lot of different ways you could do it. But anyone want to try to characterize either of the Yachlokus that the Riva is describing? There are many different ways to approach it. Again, if you look in the Bereshit Moshe, he discussed this as well. Yeah?
The first one we need of the Ochaz in it, but doesn't make it, like the second one says, where even this Rabbi is that Mashtach Hashiach, no, it's like those Lashon is his.
Okay.
Even
so,
if he's lying, but I mean, just the way he's used it is that it's his.
Okay, so that's definitely a very valid way to formulate it. That you could essentially say that if you have Olsen, if each party is holding on to it, that creates a genuine monetary right to each party. Each party now has a strong claim on half of this property, and therefore a Bedesin has the, perhaps, responsibility or the right to assign it that way. And whatever issue we have with Ramos cannot outweigh this. We generally do not want to support a Ramai, we don't want to facilitate a Ramai. We have to figure out what exactly we're worried about. But it's not enough to outweigh the financial rights each party has here. So because of their open status, each party is entitled to have. And my concern that somebody is lying is not enough to take away the rights of each party. In other words, you have to say their rights are not based on historical reality, because it clearly isn't historical reality. But their rights are based on their current status of holding it. That gives a financial schus to each one. And I can't take that away from them because I'm concerned of Ramoi. So whatever Ramoi is not enough to negate their right to 50% each. Could also formulate that as some suggest that maybe Ramoi means I'm not going to give somebody money when he's possibly around. But I'm not going to take away their money either. So since each one comes with a claim of at least half, so just because one of them is a Rami, he's still not going to lose what he comes in with. Each one is coming in with 50% ownership, even though he's a Rami, we're not going to take that away from him. If we don't have Olsen, so then we still have the right to split the property, according to the Riva. We still can do Yachloku. But that Yachloku is a pshar. It's not a schus that each side gets. It's an assessment that Beis Din will make that pshara is appropriate in this situation. So therefore, if that's the case, so
So they can do that even without Ofsin. But they're not going to reward a Ramai with a Pshara. Somebody comes and makes a claim, and he's lying. So we're not going to say, well, you're coming in with a scam, so we'll compromise and give you half of what you're trying to get. If he's entitled, he's entitled. But if he's going to come in and ask for a Pshara, and so it's a good way to make some free money. You have no actual claim, but you start a fuss, and you come with a scam, and you'll get half. So we don't want to do that. We don't want to encourage such scams, so we're not going to make a pshara. So again, there's a lot of different ways you could understand this distinction within the Riva, but this seems to be a decent way to say it, that those are the two models. There is the achloku that comes out of some basic justice, some type of at least theoretical MS and vados, and that is more important than the Ramai consideration. Everybody is entitled to 50%. And then there's a different avenue of Yachloku, which is a pshara, and that you're getting as a gift of Bezdin, essentially, and that's going to work unless there is a Ramai. That we will be put off if a Ramai is involved. Anyone have any questions on that? Does that make sense? All right, so let's try to recap what we spoke about today so far, and then we'll go to Daven Melacha. So essentially, we spoke about the following. We talked about an Iraktia, which shifts the case of Ochsin to a case where one side is definitely lying. And it was a machlokas whether or not we could allow Yachloku under those circumstances. Rashi and the Ramban said no, and Tosos and the Rush said yes. And we tried to figure out what are they fighting about. And we mentioned one possibility, that maybe it's about, is Bezdin really involved here? Maybe if Bezdin is really involved, they're not going to sign off on a situation which is conceptually impossible based on Sheker. But if they're just overseeing a natural, self-evident division of property, maybe it could work. And that's possibly also relevant to the case of Shnayim Adukim the Talis. You have two people who are holding on to the Talis and their fingers are giving them some extra benefit. They actually have material under the fingers. So there they get to keep that plus the Yachloku of the uncovered territory. And it was a Machlokas Rishonim. The Gemara says they have to take a Shvua. They have to take a Shvua only on the splitting of the middle or the Shvua on the whole thing. And maybe it's the same question. Should we say that there's a certain self-evident division which doesn't even need Bezdin, no Shvua, no nothing? Or should we say that Bezdin is really paskening here and therefore they're going to impose their rules on the whole situation and make you take a Shvua on everything? And we discussed also the Gemara in Yevamos, where there was a situation, a complicated situation between a Yorshim of a Yavam and Yorshim, possible Yoresh of an original husband, and there was a Yachloku scenario, and then there was a later claim. So the Gemara wants to know, does the Yachloku get reversed, or does the Yachloku stand? And maybe it's the same question. Was Yachloku a psak of Bezdin, or was it an automatic reflection of this debate, and maybe other things can change it? So that was one way to look at this whole Rashi Tosfos debate. Do we say Yachloku if there's a definite liar involved? Another way to look at it is the question of, once you say Ani Araktia, it's still possible for the Chalukah to be true. It just can't be true based on what they're saying. They're definitely lying. But the psak might still be a real psak. It might still conceivably be the actual truth. So when we talk about Yecholios Emes, is it enough that it's conceivably true? Or does it have to be conceivably true based on what they are also saying? And we saw that also maybe could tie into the question of what is Yachloku? Is Yachloku a pshara? Maybe as long as we have some viable possibility, it'll be okay. Or is the Yachloku supposed to be some kind of a real psak, in which case maybe we need it to be more genuinely possible? So then we discussed a little bit more that question. Again, what is the Yachloku? Is it a definite psak, so to speak, or is it an expression of policy in the case of a suffik? And we brought in the issue of, if you have other weak evidence, would that be taken into account at all? Should we say that there is a real chazaka here, each party is entitled to have?
Or should we say it's really just a wishy-washy kind of division, and any other suffix, any other low-level evidence will also be counted. So we talked about Cheskes Marakama, if one party owned it to begin with. We talked about Bari Veshema, where the Ramban took a stand in Baba Basra that Bari Veshema would count for a Yachloku situation. And even though Tosfos and Armasechta talks about the house collapsing and seems to say differently, we mentioned that Rav Osner points out there that's a much stronger case. We know that they both own the house together. Here, we don't have that much. All of our evidence just based on the fact that they're holding it now. Maybe that's very weak. And we saw this was also a question in the Ran. The Ran says the Gemara in Dav Vav, which talks about some weird kind of acknowledgement, somebody grabbed it away from somebody else, and the other person didn't object, he objected later. So what's the Gemara's question? Says the Ran, it's the same thing. Should we factor in very low-level evidence in this case? Or do we say, no, there is some kind of absolute muksak, and we're not going to pay attention to low-threshold things that don't meet our standard for actual evidence? And then we talked about some further questions about what the muksak actually is in. Is the muksak, whatever this muksak means, to say that they're muksak, is a real muksak or a fake muksak, but is it a muksak in the whole talus or in half? In other words, is each one getting just what their muksak is, or are they muksak in the whole thing and therefore they have to give up something to the other? So that seems to be a machlokas rishonim. And that was also involved in the migo question, when Tosu says, if somebody claims he only owns a quarter of it, so that's only because he only owns a half of it, so he ends up with a quarter, why don't we give him the half straight out? Because he has a migo, because if he claimed the whole thing, he would have gotten a half too. So let's just give him the straight half that he's claiming, because migo supports it. So to answer that question, you have to first figure out, what do you want your migo to do? Do you want your migo to be motzi min al-mufsa? The other guy has a chazaka? Or do you want your migo to establish a chazaka for yourself? So different Rishonim have different ways of expressing it, which also goes to this basic question of what exactly is going on. And then finally we got to the Riva in Baba Basra, that the Riva, we only focused till now on the first half of the Riva, that says you don't need Ochsin, you just need to make sure there's no Ramai. But then the same Riva went on to say, but if there is Ochsin, then you could do Yachloku even if there is a Ramai. And it pushed us to say that certainly, at least according to the Riva, there are two systems of Yachloku, two different worlds in which we might say, let's divide it up. In one case, the Ochsin case, there's a genuine monetary right. So we'll give each one 50% al-pidin. And the concern that somebody's lying is not enough, for whatever reason, to undo that. While the second case is a case of a pshara, where Beis Din decides it's a good way to resolve this standstill. Doesn't require an actual merit of a ofzin. But in such a case, we're not going to reward a Ramai. If somebody's a Ramai, if there's a definite Ramai involved, then that type of pshara we're not going to put into effect. Okay, any questions about any of that? Again, a lot of that stuff is very complicated. This whole mesechta involves a lot of complicated material. So please, lo habayi shemome, please do not hesitate to have any questions in public and private, or during daytime, during nighttime.